Welcome to The Leading Tone, a podcast that explores all aspects of all types of music. I'm Fernando.
And I'm Alex, and welcome to The Leading Tone podcast. Today, we're talking about jazz, once again, taking a break from classical literature this week. Our focus today is the legacy of Stan Kenton, American bandleader and pianist, and his lineage in the jazz world. But before we do that, let's guess that lick. It's that lick or there's
a prize. Welcome to Guess That Lick, our weekly quiz show that tests our musical memory. Each of us will bring an isolated excerpt of music, either from a recording or just a piano track recording. We've got a piano track recording today. And the other co-hosts will have three listens to Guess That Lick. For a maximum of 5 points per episode, here is the scoring breakdown. 1 point for the piece, the movement, the composer, the time period, and the genre. Sometimes that'll get modified a little bit. We might change a little bit of that today. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and try to guess that lick. Let's give you the first listen.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, that was the first listen. That that barrage of notes, I think, will give you a good clue, but let's see what you've come up with so far from the first listen.
Okay, well, I know it's definitely jazz to go along, I guess, with today's episode, but barrage of notes, I'm thinking it's a trumpet solo. I'm thinking this is
a trumpet solo. Okay, well, yeah. You're right on with the genre. It is jazz music. Can you guess time period? I think that's a little bit easier to figure out.
It's definitely a bop kind of solo, so somewhere in the 40s, 50s, 60s kind of range.
Yeah, that's good. That's good enough for this. We'll give you another listen because I think you're off the trail a little bit with
the
some
instrument,
of your guesses.
Maybe. I think it might be. Maybe, yeah. Let's take another listen.
All right, that's the second listen. Now, I do want to bring your attention to the harmony and the arpeggiated patterns here.
Okay, so that makes me think that maybe it's a piano solo, maybe?
Yeah, I guess the instrument, the piano sound kind of throws you off a little bit.
Okay, so, well, another instrument, I guess, that might be capable of that, maybe it's a saxophone?
Yeah, it is a saxophone.
Okay, it's a saxophone, okay. This is tough. This is really tough. I'm guessing it's something Coltrane, maybe?
Yep, it is Coltrane.
Oh, okay, it's something Coltrane. Okay. It's not some of his later, more experimental stuff, for sure. I'm thinking... Let me get my last listen.
Okay, so just for the scoring recap right now, we've got the composer, John Coltrane, who's also the soloist in this moment.
Right.
The time period we got right, and the genre of jazz is also right. So we're just waiting for the piece, and we'll modify movement for album.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to take a wild leap here. Maybe not so wild. I'm going to guess this is from Giant Steps.
It is from Giant Steps.
Giant Steps album, and I'm going to guess it's a part of Giant Steps solo, because I think Fernando might be being nice to me a little bit here.
Yes, it is both the chart Giant Steps from the album Giant Steps, and this is John Coltrane solo on that chart. So yeah, that's a full 5 points.
And the piano sound definitely threw me off, because I'm just like, I could definitely see this being a right-hand piano thing. So really good lick here. We talked about John Coltrane on our previous jazz episode back in August, so be sure to check that out if you haven't already.
Well, we've got Alex with 9 points for this month, and then myself with 10 points for this month, and then lifetime scores, we've got myself at 20 points, and then Alex at 18 points.
Ooh,
now.
I'm sneaking up.
Yeah, sneaking up. So, doing a great job there.
Well, we hope you all had fun trying to guess that lick with us. Let's go ahead and move on to today's listening spotlight. Welcome to today's listening spotlight. Today, we're going to listen to something that's a little bit related to our topic. This is Malagueña by Ernest Lecuona, a Cuban composer. This work is actually frequently featured throughout jazz history, including our focus composer today, Stan Kenton. So many have not heard the original work. This is actually a part of a larger work called Suite Andalusia for Piano. This is the sixth movement, Malagueña. Let's take a listen. Thank you.
That was from Ernest Lecuona's Suite Andalusia, and that was the sixth movement, Malagueña. A wonderful, wonderful piano version of this tune that is characteristic or characterizing the area of Malaga in Spain. And so Stan Kenton is going to use that later on in his music. He draws upon this, and it's actually very similar, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. It's just a little bit more of that brightness from the brass that really characterizes it. And it's become really popular throughout the jazz genre, as well as guitar and even marching band and drum corps. Very, very popular. So definitely utilized in a lot of different genres. And it's obviously resonated with a lot of people because it's been adapted so many times.
Yeah, it's just an incredibly tuneful melody.
Yeah.
And all of the harmony and everything that goes around it is also just excellent.
Well, we hope that you enjoyed Ernest Lecuona's Suite Andalusia, Movement 6, Malagueña. Let's go ahead and move on to today's topic. Welcome to today's topic. As we said earlier, this is our second episode of our jazz series. We did one back in August of this year. One of our favorite things about this podcast is giving context musically and historically to some of our favorite musicians. And jazz is really the perfect place for this because it's really easy to trace the lineage of great teachers, band leaders, performers, and arrangers because that information is available to us because it's all happened within the last 100 years.
Right.
And maybe a little bit more with Joplin and such, but really, it's such recent history, so it's really fascinating to be able to trace that back.
Yeah, much more well-documented than some of the, 17th century people or 18th century people.
Right, where sometimes we can only guess, but, generally, it's pretty well-documented. So, our topic today is Stan Kenton, an American jazz bandleader, pianist, and arranger who lived from 1911 to 1979. So quite the career for Stan Kenton here. He actually began at age 16. His first playing gig was actually at a hamburger shop where he played for 50 cents a night.
Yeah, and that was probably not too bad money-wise at the time.
No, absolutely not. Candy was a penny.
So. Right. He's getting a pretty good deal there. I'm sure it was fun for him.
Right, yeah. Performing is its own reward, I think, in that sense. I think he was just having a good time getting to play, for sure, there. So his real career after the hamburger shop kind of began when he's arranging and playing the piano for these theater and dance bands, and he's really getting a lot of influence from Louis Armstrong and Earl Hines at the time, who were both kind of big throughout the 20s and such.
Right, yeah. Of course, you would draw inspiration from some of the most popular jazz musicians of the time, and especially for these theater and dance bands. And I think that this beginning of his career really shapes how he approaches his music later. Because of this need for dance and portrayal of ideas in the theater, I think you get that almost programmatic nature or dance-like rhythms in his music later.
Absolutely.
Even when it becomes a little bit more abstract or progressive.
Right. And speaking of progressive, he really kicks things into gear here starting in 1941. This is when he was forming his own big band, the first one, the Artistry and Rhythm Orchestra, circa 1941. And definitely was an accurate name there because the group had garnered a reputation for being loud, precise, and this really exciting and bold new group amongst big bands because you have Ellington and Basie, and Kenton is also a big name amongst those.
Right, yeah. Big enough name to dominate the jazz charts throughout the 40s here, which is already an incredible feat, when you think about all the other people that are writing music or performing music in the 40s in that jazz genre.
Right, yeah. This is the pop music of the time.
Yeah, it is. And that's something that is greatly overlooked, I think, now. Because
absolutely,
jazz was the pop music of the time, and that's what everybody was listening to. That's what was on the radio. And now we have a different kind of popular music today, but a much more diverse variety of music on the radio or streaming services or wherever you listen to music. I think you have so many more options, and I think that's also important as well. But jazz being the popular genre of the time, this Stan Kenton was kind of a big name.
Absolutely.
Even so early in his career.
Yeah, and I think that as we go on, we'll talk about how pop today does have a lot of influence from the jazz of the days we're talking about now. Because, I mean, it was the pop music, and you still hear and see those echoes throughout pop today, even if they're maybe a little bit more muted in some aspects. But in terms of harmony and rhythm, dance, I mean, you still got a lot of the same things going on today. Mm-hmm. So we're talking still about the artistry and rhythm group that he started in 1941. Pete Regulo becomes arranger in 1945, who helped bolster the success of the group with some really dynamic arrangements. He's also known for collaborations with Nat King Cole, as well as a lot of TV and film credits, and that's Pete Regulo there. Regulo was also a huge fan of Stravinsky and Bartok, which kind of led them to this great 1946 album, Artistry and Rhythm, the name of the band. So you're going to hear on this album a lot of different influences from, in terms of harmony, from composers like Stravinsky and Bartok, which we've talked about on the show before.
You know, I wonder with us naming all these big name composers or musicians, I wonder how he got these connections.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's, I mean, Nat King Cole alone is already a big deal. If you're getting the arranger that was working with Nat King Cole for a little bit, that's impressive.
Yeah. Well, I guess having making such a splash on the charts in the 40s really brought in a lot of great people. So next, Stan Kenton did not just have one band throughout his career. No, he had many. This is 1949. This is the establishment of his next big band with this big performance at Carnegie Hall. This is his band, Progressive Jazz. And that name, again, is no fluke. It's really meant to represent the turn jazz was taking as a whole and the changes it's taking on throughout this time.
Right. And so when we're in this time period, it is actually very much related to our previous episode where we talked about Miles Davis and John Coltrane. They're also taking this progressive turn. If you think about the smaller jazz groups of the time, they're trying to get more progressive too at the same time. So everybody's kind of taking this turn. The big bands are going to go a different route than the smaller groups are, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because of the limitations of the small groups and the possibilities of the bigger groups as well.
Right, and that's what Kenton was really big about. He was trying to expand possibilities and instrumentation and orchestration by bringing in all these different arrangers and orchestrators throughout his career. So next, he gets even more progressive. He returns later that year and brings a 43-person group. This is called the Innovations in Modern Music Orchestra. So another very progressive name there. This had all your normal big band staples in the group, but expanded. So bigger brass section, bigger saxophone section, bigger rhythm section, but also full string orchestra. So this group was really, really huge and quite experimental and quite fun. The group actually took two tours throughout the nation in 1950 and 1951, but short-lived, unfortunately. The group became too costly, and from this point on, he maintained several more big bands, but never to the scope of this 43-person Innovations in Modern Music Orchestra.
Yeah, and that's such a huge group, and it just shows that he's trying to take these big risks almost with his music.
Yeah.
And I think they all paid off. I mean, he's using these huge groups with sometimes odd instrumentation or unusual instrumentation for the time.
Right.
And it works for me. I mean, like the I like all of the different sounds that he's able to achieve with the bigger band.
Yeah, and if you haven't gathered it at this point, we're huge Stan Kenton fans here. I think that out of the big band composers, there's a special draw for both of us to Stan Kenton. Just, I think that there's this certain agitation or furiousness to his fast charts that really just really, really get me excited. And then the ballads are so creative in terms of harmony and orchestration, and it's just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And you can't forget about the rhythms either.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, that's kind of his main selling point. That's what he was really interested in too.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, artistry and rhythm,
right?
The band name and the chart. So definitely there. We'll talk a little bit more about some of his albums later. But so we just got done talking about his innovations in modern music orchestra. Next, he's kind of entering this age where he's a lot more involved in the growing field of jazz education, which up until this point was kind of a he said, she said kind of field of education, because it was just like, all right, sit down and you play and you learn. But I think jazz pedagogy had not really evolved to the point where it was not only that, but also in schools. Now he's becoming increasingly more involved, and he's starting famous jazz clinics and camps at Indiana University and Michigan State and throughout a bunch of different schools in the country. But those are where he gets his start. And throughout his career, he's going to all these different campuses as a talent scout and a band trainer. And that's where he's getting his band members. Unlike Ellington or Basie, from this year to this year, they had this personnel and then they rotated. Every recording, it's like it's some different student from the University of North Texas that go on to be famous or something. So crazy there to me. And I love that he's so involved in pioneering jazz education in that sense.
Right. And this has to be the start of jazz getting really big in the universities and in schools, because jazz is still so young at this time.
Yeah.
Or at least jazz as we know it, or as it was established at the time, it was still so young. 1959 is only a few decades after we started really saying the word jazz.
Right.
after the word was invented, essentially. So
yeah. And I mean, during this time, I find it crazy that he's pioneering jazz education in a lot of senses. Not entirely. It's not all credited to him, but I think that it is important to note with him. But during this time, he's also writing these great albums that in 1961, he won 2 Grammy Awards for his West Side Story album and his Adventures in Jazz album. The West Side Story album is arranger Johnny Richards' take on the Bernstein and Sondheim classics, and he reimagines them for a big band, and they're great arrangements and really fun orchestration, and it's just a great album, great listen.
Right, and when you take already great music and then just modify it in a way that changes it ever so slightly to give it a different feeling.
Yeah.
It's really remarkable. I really enjoy this album as well as a lot of other ones just because it's a tune I already know,
yeah,
but it's presented in this new way that is really fresh.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that that's among one of the best starting points, especially if you're familiar with the Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim West Side Story there. Now, this next one is a little bit more original. Well, not to call the West Side Story unoriginal, but Adventures in Jazz. There's some really great tracks in here. Turtle Talk, Waltz of the Prophets, Limehouse Blues, Misty, and of course the ever famous Malagueña, which we talked about in our listening spotlight today. Lots of great staples in here, and all of those tracks, and plus the other ones that I didn't even list here, are really, really great tracks. So this is a really cool album.
Right. And the really notable thing about both of these albums is that they both featured the mellophonium. The mellophonium was a new instrument at the time. It had a really large flared bell and coiled tubing, and he was, I guess, just trying it out. You know, this is another risk that he's taking, a completely almost new instrument at the time, and putting it into the big band setting.
Right. Well, his decision was influenced by he wanted an alto voice to kind of fill out the brass section, because you have your trumpet section and then the trombone section would include bass trombone as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's close to being full, but he wanted that middle voice similar to how the saxophone section would be filled out a little bit more. So he adds in the mellophoniums, and it's similar to that of today's marching mellophone and the marching mellophone of the time as well. So,
but it is different.
It is different. It's a different instrument, but it is similar. But you could slap your trumpet players on it and they could learn it pretty quick. And as we've been talking about, like, these albums have completely different personnel as well, because he's taking all these people from all of his university visits at the time. But now he's starting to have to compete with a little bit more of what we would call pop music today. Unfortunately, he's having to compete with popular artists such as Elvis Presley, which kind of made it hard for him to find as much success during this time.
Right. Rock is starting to really evolve or start
right.
to become what it is today at this point, where you have Elvis on the scene making his mark and doing it well. And then you also have the beginning of the Beatles around this time.
Yes.
Who are about to take off. But they're just forming when these albums are coming out. They're just kind of getting together. So imagine these albums trying to compete with the first Beatles album or any of Elvis's music. I think
right.
that's a really interesting comparison, because a lot of the times we don't think of jazz in comparison to other genres of music. And we don't keep the timeline in mind when we think about, you know, this person was playing at the same time as Elvis.
Right.
Right. This person was playing at the same time as the Beatles.
And we talk about branching paths, particularly in jazz history, because it all kind of started in one place, but then went a million different directions, especially as the 20th century progressed. Elvis and the Beatles essentially are born out of that lineage as well. So they owe a lot to probably the music of Kenton and Basie and Ellington throughout the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So
right.
it is really interesting that those kind of start to overtake the jazz genre a little bit, but it does not take away from the quality of Kenton's music
right.
at all. If it was up to us, the Beatles and Kenton would be held in the same regard for sure.
Right, and who knows, maybe they were both kind of drawing on each other's music in a way, because you can definitely hear some progressive elements in the Beatles' music.
Yes.
In the same way you hear progressive elements in Stan Kenton's music.
Right, yeah, and that's a whole episode right there. That'd be great to discuss even more. Well, let's move on here with a little bit more about Kenton specifically. So in 1965, he creates yet another big group. This is the Los Angeles Neophonic Orchestra. This is an expanded 23-piece group, so not quite to the point of that 43-piece group we talked about earlier. But this one's really interesting because it just shows how diverse and crazy Kenton's music can get, because this group is, in one performance, they performed his jazz piano concerto, Kenton's jazz piano concerto, as well as symphonic transcriptions of Wagner, Richard Wagner's compositions, which I'm like, what? How does Kenton and Wagner, where does this intersect here? And I'm just like, wow, Kenton just is doing so much.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting juxtaposition of jazz and Wagner. And that's, again, a huge risk by Stan Kenton to do a program like that.
Right.
And to have this expanded group, 23 people, I mean, that's a very large group for jazz. And for, I mean, even for the time, I think.
You know, for me, I think I like to think that it shows that Stan Kenton was all about the music. He was not about topping the charts. Maybe he happened to top of the charts a few times, but he was about having fun, playing great music, and innovating. So really, really interesting there from Stan Kenton. So now in 1970, he's led to his creation of Creative World Records label, as well as Creative World Music, which allows him to bring all of his music a little bit under the same umbrella. Solve some of his problems maybe with having to deal with labels and such. It's always much easier if you're doing it yourself and in-house, at least creativity standpoint. You're not as pressured to do you can play Wagner and
right. And that definitely helps your point of saying that he's all about the music, because he doesn't want the pressure from other people, other record labels and things like that.
Right, yeah, and that can be notoriously difficult to deal with. Let's talk about some of Kenton's albums now and some of our recommendations for the audience, because really we're all about the music too, and we can't really play any of these for you just yet, but hopefully one day we can get the rights to play these on the show. Let's talk about some of these albums. This first one I want to talk about is Kenton 76, his 1976 album. This is one under the Creative World Records label. This is his first after a long hiatus due to Kenton's worsening health, actually, but he comes back. There's some really, really inventive compositions and arrangements in this one, including arrangements of Send in the Clowns, My Funny Valentine, and a few others in there. My favorite from this album is the track Decoupage, which is a track entirely in 5/4. Really, really cool track. I had the pleasure of playing that a few years ago in a university big band, and man, how cool is that chart?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's not just Dave Brubeck doing the 5-4 jazz.
Right, yeah, Kenton is doing it just as well. Next one I want to talk about, this is a good sampling of some of his music from the 50s. Three albums, Kenton and Hi-Fi, Innovations in Modern Music, and Cuban Fire. So Kenton and Hi-Fi features artistry jumps, painted rhythm, and the concerto to end all concertos. That's a bold name for a track right there. Features some really fine arranging from Pete Rugolo as well as Kenton throughout that one. Really, really cool album and has been my earworm this week. So definitely worth checking out. Another one from the 50s, Innovations in Modern Music. Trajectories, The Lonesome Road, and Solitaire are some highlights from that one. Cuban Fire, this is one that Fernando's a really huge fan of, particularly La Suerte de los Tontos.
Right, a Latin album, right? And that is already kind of drawing on what was popular at the time. I think Latin music was getting pretty popular in the 50s. He includes a lot of Latin percussion, obviously, and just some great, great tracks on here. But yeah, I just really love some good Latin jazz, and this album has it. Like we said, La Suerte de los Tontos and others, like Early Hours, make it just a really fun album. It's a really, really fun Latin, groovy album that and I think anybody can get into.
Oh, absolutely. As soon as you exposed me to this one this past week, it has been my earworm. Another one of my earworms from this past week. So really, really fun stuff from Cuban Fire, his 1956 album. Next, let's talk about some of his music in the 40s. We already talked a little bit about his Artistry and Rhythm group, but this is the Artistry and Rhythm album. That's the album title from 1946. This is a really good representation of Kenton's music in the 40s and some of the experimentation he's doing there. Really, really great album there. Now, this next one is pretty wild. Let's go all the way to the 70s. This is 7.5 on the Richter scale, his 1973 album. This is a really, really progressive sound that made both Fernando and I laugh a little bit, but at the same time, we really, really enjoy it. This is that progressive sound mixed with tunes like Live and Let Die by Paul McCartney, Johnny Green's Body and Soul, and Nino Rota's Love Theme from The Godfather, as well as this chart called 2002 Zarathustra Revisited, based on the work of Richard Strauss. So you've got it all in this album, and it's just so funny to me that he's doing this, like, all this pop-ish kind of stuff, and the parody on 2001 and Richard Strauss. I'm just like, man, this is cool.
Right. He is fully aware of all the music that's popular at the time, and he's trying to get that into his own music. And I think that is a bold way to go, and I think it's a really fun way to go for jazz music and for Stan Kenton in general.
Yeah, looking back at it particularly, it's pretty funny because you're just like, man, this is like pop culture right now. He's just like, let's do like pop culture, but let's do it the Kenton way.
Right, and he's got, I mean, these were tracks and charts that were just getting popular at the time for the most part, and now they're still extremely popular. Most of the themes from any of these, you would, like, most people would recognize today.
Oh yeah.
And I think that is a statement to how Kenton had a good ear for what he thought would be really great music and timeless music.
Right, yeah, stand the test of time for sure there with a 7.5 on the Richter scale, that 1973 album. Next, we have another 1961 album. This is called The Romantic Approach. This one did not win a Grammy, but this is actually the first recording with the 1961 band that later did West Side Story and Adventures in Jazz. So this one is kind of underrated, but really, really cool album here.
Yeah, yeah, and an important one as well.
Absolutely. Well, and if you're looking for a good place to start with Stan Kenton, usually I'm kind of against some of these best of albums because I feel like they miss some of the highlights. But the 2006 album published posthumously of a bunch of Kenton recordings called The Best of Stan Kenton is a really great entry point, I think, for new Kenton listeners, featuring a lot of great original recordings from throughout his career. Artistry and Rhythm, Intermission Riff, The Peanut Vendor, 23 Degrees North, 82 Degrees West, Waltz of the Prophets, Laura, Stompin' at the Savoy, Malaguena. So really good selections, I think, from throughout his career. And that was where I started when we decided we were going to do a Kenton episode. That was where I started for this week to kind of remind myself of some of Kenton's music. And I was like, this is a really good combination of a lot of his music.
Yeah, I think that that is a great album to start with because it does show the diversity in his music. And you get a really good feeling for some of the more progressive stuff as well as some of the a little bit older and more traditional stuff as well.
Getting away from the albums a little bit, be sure to check some of those albums out. We'll leave some links in the show notes for that. We talked about at the beginning how giving context to some of our favorite musicians is really important to us here at the Leading Tone Podcast. And with that, let's talk about some of these really notable soloists from Kenton's bands throughout the years. Fernando, you want to take it away?
Yeah, so some soloists from these Kenton bands. We've got Anita O'Day, very well-known singer, still a very common name in jazz. June Christie, another singer. Lee Konitz, an alto sax player, mostly. Art Pepper, also primarily alto sax, sometimes tenor. Stan Getz, a very big name in bossa nova and in his own music as well. He played tenor sax mostly. Zoot Sims, another tenor sax player. And Pepper Adams, a barry sax player.
And then we're getting into these brass players here. Maynard Ferguson on trumpet, Kai Winding on trombone, and then Lorindo Almeida on guitar, and Shelly Mann on drums. So a lot of names that would get their start at Kenton and then go on to do really, really great things. And if you listen to some of their solos on these Kenton albums, I'm just like, wow, man, really, really great players then that would go on to do even more great things after Kenton. So you see this kind of family tree just with Stan Kenton alone to a lot of greats in the later 20th century in the jazz genre.
Definitely. And we've got some remarkable arrangers as well, some notable arrangers from the Kenton bands. Like we said, Rugolo, also Shorty Rogers, Jerry Mulligan, Neil Hefti, William Russo, and Johnny Richards. So Kenton's arranging himself, but he also has some phenomenal arrangers coming in that would go on to be either great composers or arrangers for other bands as well.
Yeah, and I think that Kenton's arranging only got better around these great arrangers. I think he definitely picked up a thing or two from each one of these guys as they came in and definitely learned a lot throughout his career because, man, Kenton's arrangements are no slouch either. I think that I would compare his to any of the great jazz arrangers throughout history. I think that his stuff is among the best and the most exciting for me.
Yeah, I think so too. It's a really exciting, it's always an exciting style and an exciting arrangement from Stan Kenton. And yeah, even a chart that I might not normally like, I'll probably like it with Stan Kenton's music because right, it's presented in a new way, in a different way that I haven't heard before. And he's just so great at mixing styles and drawing upon these different inspirations to create something very different. And that's what makes it so interesting to listen to.
Absolutely. I think there's just so much to dive into with Stan Kenton's music. We hope that after today you go and check some of it out for yourself because, man, I think that he is so worthy of being called one of the best big band leaders and arrangers of all time. I think that Stan Kenton's music is just so incredible and definitely stands along with the greats.
Right, so make sure to check out Stan Kenton's music if you would like to. Also, check out our previous jazz episode if you're into that as well, because I think these really go together well. The previous one is about the same time period, a little bit later. It extends right, a little bit later, so you might be interested in that as well if you haven't heard it already.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about some really great soloists and musicians on that one. This one a little bit more big band focused, so it's interesting to see the parallels between the two. We hope that you guys enjoyed this episode. We had a lot of fun just listening to some great Stan Kenton this week, and we hope that it finds its way into some of your listening this week and in the future as well.
If you have any recommendations for what you would like to hear on the show, please let us know through any of the social media outlets or email listed at the end in the outro. We're going to be using our regular outro today, even though we've been changing it up a little bit for the previous two episodes, I think. So we hope you enjoyed. And Alex, you have anything else to say?
Nope. Just be sure to tune in each Monday and listen to some more of the Leading Tone Podcast. We really appreciate your viewership, and we hope that you guys stick with us. Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
Thanks for listening to the Leading Tone Podcast. You can email us at theleadingtonepodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can find us on social media at the Leading Tone Podcast with no spaces on Instagram and the Leading Tone Podcast on Facebook.
Thanks again, and tune in next Monday for more of the Leading Tone Podcast.